I'm Charles Breton.
I'm Helena Epstein.
And I'm Chris Henson. Together we are
a Jew
and
a Gentile walking to
a bar
mitzvah.
Here we are with episode 102 of your favorite podcast full of theology, cigars, whiskey, and F-bombs. All our usual suspects are here, the Jew, the Gentile, Rev Helena.
Officially.
Officially now,
no, Rev Helena. Officially pending.
Officially pending. Pending, Rev Helena.
That sounds almost Methodist. It's so yes and no at the same time.
I don't have my date set yet.
But you do have some good news.
I did.
That's what we're referring.
Yeah.
They approved me for ordination, but we have right to hammer out the details. Very exciting.
Okay. That's very exciting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't want to make a joke, but I'm like, let her have her moment.
Please, yeah, thank you. Important. I appreciate yes. that. Yeah.
It doesn't need to be snidely joked about yet.
Not yet.
Not for another couple of episodes.
We must bask in the glory that is ordination. Yeah.
Dude, it's been a long road. No lie.
Yes, it has.
Well, if you want to know the continuing saga of Rev Helena's ordination, you are listening to us, but tell your friends they can find us on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts, at our website, and also at Theology Corner. We need to thank our sponsors, as we always try to do at the top of the show, though we always don't get through it.
Not in one straight shot.
But Men of the Beard, Beard Oil, Virgil Cane Rye Whiskey, which is becoming increasingly difficult to get in North Carolina.
That's a sad thing. We may have to move. We have to move to another liquor.
No, I was just going to move to another state.
Where do they carry it?
South Carolina, because that's where they're from. And I don't think South Carolina has ABC.
They have Red Dots.
Yeah.
They're going to the Red Dot store.
Yeah, but they're not alcohol control.
Oh, well, no, there's nothing controlled about alcohol in the state of South Carolina.
Yeah. And we pretend like it is in North Carolina, but that's just keep the Baptists happy. Speaking of alcohol, also Four Saints Brewing Company, which will be hosting our monthly Drinking Religiously coming up. Top Leaf Cigar Lounge, the premier lounge, cigar lounge in the Triad.
Yes, it is.
And Imagine Nat, where you can get all of your wonderful crafted goodies, including Rev Helena Stoles. I'm sure you've ordered one.
I haven't yet, but we've discussed it a little bit.
Okay.
Oh, I hear design options.
Yes.
Oh, snap.
So if you have some ideas for Rev Helena Stole, you can send them to us at ajewandagentile@charlesandchris.net, and we could have a fan design stole for you.
Ooh, that would be very exciting.
Interesting, yeah.
That would be.
I feel at some point there should be something embroidered on there. What a long, strange trip it's been. Oh, God. It hits a lot of elements.
Yeah,
not all that glitters is gold.
Right. Well, fuck yourself. That would also.
Yeah.
That'd be on the underside of it. In case it's like
right,
a really
right, just service. Right. Right underneath or the right side, so you can just flip it up and remind yourself not to say this.
I have one that my mother got me that it looks like, when you look at it at first, it looks like it's a bunch of Jesus fish, you know?
Right.
But she got it when she was down in Brazil or some kind of South American mission. So they're actually piranha. When you look at them closely, they have these jagged fucking teeth.
That's awesome.
But I thought of that because it was Helena's, because she's, you know, not your average fish. She's carnivorous.
Yeah. Yeah, got big teeth.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Brazil, what are you smoking, Chris?
The fuck's this? Oh, well, since our podcast is going to be on hell, it's actually a cigar I haven't fucking smoked. I'm not going to.
Okay.
But a certain unnamed Jew may have given me in the holiday season year last.
No, he did not give it to you. You chose it.
Oh, no. It's predestined. I got this shit stick. We are, of course, talking about Drew Estate's abortion, the Kentucky Fire Cured. And I don't know what it tastes like, other than it was such a gag gift, emphasis on the gag. Charles gave me like three decent cigars. You know, like you'd actually buy and smoke them. and then put this little shit stain beside it.
I almost bought you some of those as a joke when I was in Kentucky, and I decided not to waste my money.
Charles said it's
mine was gifted. And so, but you got to understand, you got to make this clear to our listener that this was a dirty Santa. So the idea was
Santa's a dirty motherfucker.
There was a couple of cigars that you actually wanted, and then there's this one because I was trying to create the ethical moral dilemma for whoever chose it. You know, do I try to pawn this off on somebody because there's these really two good cigars in there? But I don't want this Kentucky Fire Cured. So what do I do with this pack? Do I keep it for the good cigars, or do I try to get rid of it because of the Kentucky Fire? No,
that cigar is so bad. It doesn't matter what you put it with. You know,
did it leach into your good cigars?
Yeah, it probably has. But now I've kept it in the box.
You didn't put it in the humidor, did you?
Yeah.
No, you put it in the fireplace.
Mercy.
It's only recently been cold enough this weekend to actually consider fires, which means sometime next week. Well, actually, no, because summer will be away. Otherwise, there'd be my house would be full of smoke as she yet again tries to master the fireplace. So,
yeah, she doesn't.
I definitely don't want to open it. I already got the rogue skunk patrolling my fucking house at night. I don't need the Kentucky Fire Cured thrown in and just added to the ambiance.
Hey, it might scare off the skunk.
It might.
I've not smoked it, Helena, but Charles had such a visceral reaction to it. You know, it's like scrape the grill off and whatever comes off, you know, and don't do it like do it that first year.
And then wrap that in some wet butcher paper.
Right.
And then make it look like a Maduro. You get some used charcoal and rub that on there.
Dog shit. I mean, to be honest though, how often do you think that Jonathan Drew is at a cigar event and he has this conversation where it's like, you do such good cigars. Why the fuck does this shit exist with your name on it? Of course, the answer is because it allows me to make the good cigars.
Right.
But yeah, but I mean, you know, still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, since we're going to talk about hell, I figure, well,
why not? The cigar from hell.
The cigar from hell.
Well, Lenny, do you have a good cigar?
I don't have a review. It's actually the one thing, like, I forgot to prep. And I was trying to think about what I smoked last time on the way home, and I couldn't even remember. I don't even know. So, no.
Did you visit this place in Savannah? The lounge down there on the...
I did. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's good enough.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's nice down there, other than these steps down to the riverfront that I don't know who ever was able to walk those without killing themselves.
I think a few people have.
Well, also, people were much smaller in the 17th century.
That's true.
No, these steps would be like, I mean, you feel like you need rock climbing gear. It's right near the cigar lounge there and down at the waterfront.
Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about. I was there this morning.
See, Savannah, you got the ghost walks. You got all the Methodist history.
Lots of our
founding father, if you will, got arrested and had to escape.
Yeah, you
know, classy stuff like that.
Classy, classy.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet that cigar lounge did not carry the Kentucky Fire Cured.
I bet they did not. No, but they did have acids.
Can't have everything.
Can't have everything.
Well, I smoked recently a good cigar.
At least somebody has.
Yeah, it's an AJ Fernandez. It's the Bel Art Maduro, which was nice. I hadn't had the Maduro, so I picked that stick up at last time I was at Top Leaf. And it's a Brazilian Mata Fina Maduro wrapper, San Andreas Mexican binder, and Nicaraguan Puro long filler. We start out with some white pepper that goes into the background, and most of the flavor notes are mocha, earth, and citrus. And that mocha is that black coffee, semi-sweet chocolate type mocha. And then as you lose that white pepper, you start to pick up some cedar and black pepper for the rest of the cigar, and it is quite pleasant, as you would expect, well-constructed from AJ Fernandez.
Would you say it's the inverse of the Kentucky Fire Cured?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's smokable.
Right.
Yeah.
Because Kentucky Fire Cured is not even smokable. It's combustible. But that doesn't mean you should put it in your mouth.
Yeah, that's not
the same. That's true. Yeah, not the same thing.
Which is probably a good no context hashtag. It's combustible. Don't put it in your mouth. I think I had it in your mouth thing the last episode too.
Yeah, I think we did.
But thank God I'm no longer asking about that headless cat. I haven't mentioned the headless cat in a couple podcasts.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well,
but it's Halloween, so it'll come back.
Yeah, you get to go play with Phil Wyman soon, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, next week.
For Salem's Halloween.
Yeah, I'll be there festivities. Next week.
Mm-hmm. You should bring him something from Old Salem just to kind of make it ironic and weird.
Balance it out.
Yeah. Well, I don't make it Salem too awkward, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the other Salem?
Well, there's also one in Oregon.
Well, I think with Winston-Salem, the nice thing
is... There's a trinity of them, which is awkward enough.
Okay.
Yeah. Moving on.
Moving on.
Moving on.
I feel like I'm letting the team down. Like I have no like, you know, totally random sidetrack to take tonight.
Dude, I'm like not quippy at all right now.
I know. I'm with you.
I feel terrible. I know.
So we're literally having our podcast from hell.
We're literally
you've had 101 of those, minus the ones Jay Dana was on, I guess.
That's true. Yeah.
Jay Dana. Give her a pass card.
But so our topic.
We got to throw in a commercial.
Okay. Throw in a commercial.
Commercial.
Four Saints Brewing Company. Four Saints pays homage to the patron saints of beer, St. Wenceslas, St. Nicholas, St. Luke, and St. Augustine of Hippo. They've become the most recognized patron saints for brewing and beer because of their contributions to and associations with the world's favorite sudsy beverage. Four Saints founders Joel McCloskey and Andrew Deming are carrying on the brewing tradition in hopes of future sainthood. Or at least to make some really good beer. Four Saints Brewing Company, Asheboro, North Carolina.
And we're back from commercial. And our main topic tonight is hell. We recently were taking a look at different ideas from religion and Bible and discussed how the popular culture version bears very little resemblance to what any biblical verses say about it or any doctrine. So we're going to do that with hell, because this is very interesting, because there is actually a crossover where you do have people's image of hell affect their theology and affect how they believe things. So this is more than just
very big
guys have it wrong.
A word study or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. This can lead to some really tough things. So
it's so convenient that Helene has come back from Georgia, just as
right.
You know, because everybody
went down to Georgia,
right? Or hell in half of Georgia.
Yeah,
right.
I did not think the devil went down to Georgia, but now that's all I'm gonna have stuck in my head the rest of the night is Charlie Daniels.
Yeah. Well, and I'm back now, so.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So she was one. She's down at the crossroads.
Probably drove up on the highway from hell.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got some AC/DC.
Hell's Bells.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. See, there was the distracting rant I needed, like, before the commercial. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Mission accomplished.
All right. Whew.
Hell.
So, where do you want to go first?
Well, you had two articles you'd sent us. Or,
well, I've got a number of things. I mean, I also have, I can talk about the Jewish concept.
That should be quick.
Yeah, yep. Although actually not really. There's quite a lot of Talmud on hell.
Well, you've already kind of started it, Charles. Hell.
Okay, hell. Might as well continue it. Okay. So
get the hell over with.
Yes, there is a concept of hell in Judaism, but it bears a very passing resemblance to how it's conceived of, either in the popular mind or in Christianity. The source of it, there's two basic sources. The first is the idea of Sheol, which was a trash heap outside the gates of Jerusalem.
Which New Testament is Gehenna.
Right. And it also is sometimes, there are several names for it in Judaism. It is sometimes also called Gehenna or Gehinnom. But it's also mainly comes from one of our Torah portions a couple of weeks ago, when Koach rebels against Moses. And it says in the Torah that the earth opened up and swallowed Koach and his family, all his sons and all his followers. And that's where we get the idea of an underworld of someplace below the earth, but it's not considered a place of suffering and torment. It's just that's how God punished them, is that the earth swallowed them up.
But a lot of Near Eastern cultures had underworld elements.
Right.
Whether Mesopotamian or the Greeks or Romans, which a little more Mediterranean than Near Eastern. Right.
Still. So this is where we get this idea. So the rabbis in the Talmud are discussing what goes on there. And pretty much what they're saying is that it's a place of judgment. That this is where you go when you die for your soul to be judged. And that you stay there for 12 months. And at the end of that time, your soul is either returned to God or it's annihilated. So if there is punishment, the punishment is that your soul's annihilated.
There's also a redemptive note in that.
Because that's the whole point. It's purification.
Because that's where the early church traditions is like.
Right.
Well, more so with purgatory, which
I was going to say, that's more how fiction. We think of purgatory.
Yeah, and this is a similar idea. Because the netherworld is sometimes referred to, as God's hearth. And so that's where we get this idea that there's a fire. But they say that it's a purging redemptive fire. It's not a burning torture fire. It's like a forge where you put metal in to burn off the impurities and to harden it. And that it takes 12 months and then you come out and you've been purged and you're fine. And the only question, though, is what happens with that. And in one of the Talmud sections in Erevin, 19th tractate, 1 through 23, talk about that they sometimes call it the Valley of Tears or Weeping, and that it turns into a spring. And the rabbis say, moreover, the early rain covers it with blessings, indicates that they accept the justice of God's judgment and say before him, Master of the universe, you have judged properly, you've acquitted properly, you've condemned properly, and it is befitting that you've prepared Gehenna for the wicked and the Garden of Eden for righteous. And then the Gemara raises the question, though, then who are the wicked? Are they the wicked that did not repent even as they were going into Gehenna or Gehenim? Because as it's stated, they shall go forth and look upon carcasses of the men who rebel against me. And the rabbis say, no, that it's present tense, that the way that you don't get out is if you continue to rebel. So if your rebellion against God is over and you've been purged, then you are then allowed in the presence of God. If you continue to repel, that's when your soul's annihilated. And then there's a few interesting, of course, wonderful rabbinic debates about how many entrances there are. One of the more interesting pits is that they've determined that the entrance to Sheol, to Gehenna, to Gehenim, is the size of two unteamed oxen. And
why is that interesting?
It's interesting. Well, it's just because it's the type of stuff rabbis debate. It's like, not only do we know where the entrance to hell is, we know exactly how big it is.
So literally the room temperature of hell and the furniture in heaven.
Yeah. So, you've got two unteamed oxen.
I mean, it's important to know these details.
It is. But it is important because they say the reason it needs to be the width of two unteamed oxen is so that as one enters, another leaves, so that there's this constant going in and out.
Why ox? Should it be cats? Because if there's any animal in hell, it's cats.
Well, no, the ox
are
not.
What are you trying to say about my house, man?
I'm just they call it like Sam.
No, it's that oxen are big, so it has to be a big entrance, so that as one person enters, another leaves. And they can pass each other.
Maybe there's a cat door.
Foxes are going to hell?
No, the oxen
fat people go to hell.
Oh, you know hell has a cat door.
Of course.
Oh, it has to.
Yeah. No, the oxen are just there to give a measurement in the number
of Charles is trying so hard, y'all.
I'm trying.
Sorry, Charles. Two oxes walking.
Because you can measure them.
Right.
So
you can measure cats too.
Yeah, but two cats isn't big enough for two people to walk past each other. Because the cat's going to trip one of them up.
Or just push them off into the lake of fire.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Swat them right in.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happens. You get down there and it's not dead humans. It's like fucking cats everywhere.
Okay, so well, since you're going that way, I'm going to go the direction I wasn't going to go, and that is another rabbinic story is that it's Abraham who comes and redeems all the Jews out of hell, except Jewish men who've had sex with Gentile women.
Oh.
And that's because the punishment is your foreskin is drawn out. And so Abraham doesn't recognize that you are Jew because he can't tell that you've been circumcised.
What the hell is going on? That's
that sounds hey, like
you brought it on like yourselves. Hell. You wouldn't let me just measure the oxen and go on. And
it's not that it like regrew. It got like pulled. Like,
yes.
From right. the remaining tissue. Yeah, right. That's fucking brutal.
Right. And because of that, Abraham, when he goes to redeem the circumcised from hell.
Doesn't know which ones.
Doesn't know what? That. You, doesn't know
what is going on. Like Abraham's like, hey, it's Abe. Everybody, show me a pecker. I mean,
yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
I agree. I believe it, Charles, because I have had sex with a Gentile woman, and it's at least she thinks it's hell. So. what? I really thought we'd okay. Okay, yeah. So.
You guys brought this on yourselves.
I mean, I don't know why you didn't lead with that, frankly.
I honestly feel like at this point,
I was saving it for the right occasion.
This is Charles, and he's got an unruly class. This is what this feels like. I now, I don't want to ever hear again about Christians. Y'all have some weird shit going on in your theology. I'm like, we ain't checking out dicks.
we ain't pulling people's.
What about all the women in hell? I mean,
right? You know, they don't matter.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, <It's just> fucking, what is going on with the Gentile chick that even happens, man?
That your foreskin has to be pulled back?
All of these are great no context hashtags. Like
pulling the foreskin.
Like Abraham, let me see your pecker. Hey, it's Abe. Let me see your pecker.
Hey, Abe, want to see my pecker?
I don't know what the Hebrew equivalent is. Yeah. Pecker just sounded funny.
What's an older word? Pecker. Yeah. I'm about to.
It sounded like the least Abrahamic thing to say.
All right, so Jews have some real fucked up ideas about what hell might be, but you know they don't agree about anything.
It's the 40th year anniversary of Biggest Dickest Sketch from Life of Brian this weekend.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
yeah.
There we go.
That's relevant and very important.
All to the circle of life.
Yeah.
The circumcised circle of life.
The circumcised circle of life.
This is the fun thing about doing the podcast, y'all. It's like, I know where we were going, and then we just...
Do you, though?
Fucking took a side road, and then we ended up...
Circumcised circles.
See, the Christians... I'm a little confused where I want to go with this next as a Christian. Is I have the thought that I was going to go with, but then it seems like we've kind of broached the subject of what does orthodoxy, and again, that's always a very relevant question, have to say about hell?
Right.
My own personal opinion is that hell and heaven exist because they have to. They're social constructs. Yeah. Someone needs them, and so they're there.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. Well, so I disagree with that.
Okay, but...
Oh, let's just go in for
it.
Ring the bell, Charles.
Okay, to back him up on an article called Moral Monsters from the Perspectives of Psychology, Philosophy, and Theology by Changho Yu, Stephen Lampert, and Kwang Tung Chung, that this idea that there are people, that there are, quote, moral monsters, that there are people who are just pure and total evil, is something that early on in European Christianity needed to be created so that they could scare the shit out of people and say, don't be like that person.
Okay, so you want to know what I think?
Go ahead and lead, Helena.
I think that hell, I don't disagree that it's a social construct, but I think it's a construct of empire to control people so that they don't experience the grace of God and understand that the world is already whole as it is. If you're acting out of fear of judgment, you're not open to grace. And I don't think that the Empire wants us to be open to grace, because then we would.
I want to know what that F-bomb was from.
Fucking cat.
See?
Fucking cat just sliced my fucking finger open.
Because you're telling its secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you need to read Saving Paradise.
I do need to read that book.
Because that's exactly what they talk about. Because for the first 1,000 years of Christianity, emphasis was on resurrection and paradise. And then it started shifting to sin and death and hell and judgment.
So we're
as Christianity started to become empire.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's truly what I think it is.
Yeah. And that's more psychological.
And that's that's a lot of what these authors are saying in Moral Monsters, that psychologically they're necessary for us, but also in terms of theology, that it was necessary. But particularly in Puritan America. So you get Jonathan Edwards, right? Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God.
Some pecker checking people, the Puritans.
Yep. And
can that be a hashtag, pecker checker?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That's actually the best one out of all of them.
I am chief pecker checker amongst you.
Right.
You really want that job, Chris?
No, no, can't say I do.
Chief pecker checker.
That's like the worst Native American name ever. What about his brothers? Two dogs fucking.
What about two dogs fucking?
That's like the worst Native American name is Chief Pecker Checker. It's a lot better than his brothers, two dogs fucking. It's a joke, much like the headless cat that actually I do know the whole. Anyway.
All right, moving on.
So as a psychological concept, I think that it's the early church didn't necessarily believe in a punitive hell. I mean, even as late as...
Well, I mean, within the text of the gospel, right? Like, Jesus literally destroys the gates of hell. So how is it that we're... Like, did God go, like, whoops, like, you weren't supposed to do that. Hold on, let me fix them.
Got to put the fucking pilot light back on now.
Yeah. How about Augustine, Aquinas, and Calvin?
What about them?
Assholes? No.
Right?
That they're mainly Augustine and then Aquinas that view hell as... being predestined, unending, a place of conscious torment, and penal.
Yeah, but there's plenty of other Reformationists that would disagree completely with that.
Yeah, right.
Well, Reformationists, but I'm talking about...
Aquinas was borrowing from Augustine, and Augustine just made up as he went along.
Well, and Augustine...
Is that just what I said? That to Augustine, and particularly Aquinas, that this is the concept of hell?
I really wish that the early church hadn't taken someone with so much like sexual shame and repression and turned them into the poster child for good theology.
Right.
Yeah.
Hashtag so also question, that John Calvin sucks.
Right. So the question then becomes, how do you square a loving God with a God who eternally punishes people?
See, I think it's a social construct in the sense that people need hell to exist. Because it's not enough that somebody bad or somebody you don't like or whatever is just annihilated. They no longer are. You want to see them in the hands of an angry God dangling over a pit of never-ending fire. Is that you need that. And it for some people, I think it makes their world right. In a similar way, one could say, well, heaven is, you know, if it's just a social construct, it could be, well, you know, the afterlife, or it's something better for those that pass on, or it makes this present suffering worthwhile with the rewards you get. Is that it doesn't seem that either one of them has to exist intrinsically for you to be a person of faith and do good things or what have you. And it gets more frightening when hell and heaven become, you know, the whip and the carrot. And
well, and honestly, like, what kind of religion, like, what kind of faith life is it if all of your emphasis is on the world to come, right? Like, how do you, like, it removes the necessity of presence, I think.
Well, and it makes Jesus incredibly not Jewish.
Incredibly not Jewish.
Which, at the end of the day,
that's the point.
I mean, wouldn't Jesus actually be the chief pecker checker in this, like...
That's still Abraham's job.
He delegated
that. Wasn't that the point of a lot of the early church was to
separate from Judaism? Yeah. Right.
Well, he becomes more Gentile as the texts go on, and certainly, but I mean, it would go against the whole closing of Matthew's gospel, as you do unto the least of these. So yep. There is a very this world thread that unfortunately Christians years later have made so otherworld. I always compared it to when I was in England waiting for a train, and that Christians look at being a Christian as this present platform on sucks ass. There's homeless people, there are drug addicts, there are, you know, all kinds of social ills and horrors, and I'm thank God my train's about here and get the fuck out of here. That is not a Christian understanding of the world, and it doesn't really reflect what heaven is going to be.
No. It is,
what are you going to do while you're waiting? What are you going to do here and now to make the plot of ground that you're standing on better? And I forget the Jewish, the works of, help me out, Jew folks.
I don't know what you're trying to
talk about. Tikkun
Olam.
I got close.
Repairing the world.
And so I think that it, again, the two exist. There's a quote that I looked up, and I actually did this. Imagine that. It's a Sufi saint, Basra, and she was found in her village carrying a torch in one hand, a bucket of water in the other. You know this one?
Oh, I love this quote. Yeah, read it.
When someone asked her what she was doing, she answered, "I'm going to take this bucket of water and pour it on the flames of hell. Then I'm going to use this torch to burn down the gates of paradise so that people will not love God for want of heaven or fear of hell, but because God is God."
I love that quote.
And I kind of, that's where I'm kind of taking my, we have to look at how much humans, we're meaning makers, that we want a version of hell. I mean, think about Dante. There's a lot of argument that he was basically writing the Divine Comedies based on, was it Rosalind? Or who was it that, Beatrice.
Beatrice. Yeah.
You know, one day she didn't look at him when she was passing the market. He goes home and writes hell. Another day it's indifferent. He writes purgatory. She says hello. He writes the heaven or paradise. At least that's something I heard at one time. And it was certainly something talked about on tours in Florence.
Yeah. But I mean, that's because they can't admit why he was really writing it.
Why is that?
He was denouncing the elites and the government of Florence.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Each of the circles of hell, the people are in there, represented the various classes of people who were operating at the time.
And see, there is something to read in books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe there's a reason we kept Charles around.
Right. But there's more than just the psychological, though, because this is something that still gets preached, especially in America among the evangelicals, where you have this idea of a God that sends people to hell, sustains their existence, and tortures them with this cruelty.
Willfully.
Yeah. And I mean, but then you're supposed to have this moral code. So how do you square these things? And it, you know, there's a lot of people,
that believe that, who truly believe that.
Yeah.
See it as a choice that you make in this life. So God is just like, because you know the consequences of not accepting Jesus Christ as your savior, i.e. hell, if you choose not to do that, then God has no choice but to maintain consistency. And it would be less loving for God to not be consistent and to, this is how it was explained to me, and I don't agree with
right.
But like that, it would demonstrate a lack of consistency on God's part to not apply the judgment that you were aware of was possible, right? So God, by your choice, has to punish you because you knew that you would be punished and you chose the path you chose anyways.
Right. But does the punishment have to be infinite?
Right. That,
according to them, aware, I mean, because we obviously can all fully comprehend infinity, right? Like, that's something that human beings have a good grasp on. So that's a fair, like, understand. Being facetious, I can see your eyes.
Because question isn't
crazy,
the...
But I know people who legitimate, like, to them, like, that is what God's love is that consistency and the application of free will.
Okay. Are you talking about just being sent to hell or the punishment that is endured in hell? Because these are two different issues.
No, that if you are aware that if you are aware that the risk of not accepting Jesus as your savior is going to hell and receiving punishment in hell, then if you make that choice, then you are getting what you justly have chosen by eternal punishment.
Right.
This goes on with what is it? Not
substantive. Yeah.
It is Victor, which is also a crock, but like.
Right. Yeah. But as John Perry in Putting Hell First, Cruelty, Historicism, and the Missing Moral Theory of Damnation says that if you're trying to square any moral code with a loving God who miraculously sustains people's existence in hell just so that he can will pain on them, then hell seems cruel because it just does, or hell seems cruel because you have the wrong theory of justice. Or to Chris's point, hell seems cruel because the Victorians were soft on crime and we need to scare the shit out of people. So we're going to...
So let's do that.
Let's do that.
But see, I think I have some merit with this because my faith has gotten a lot more healthy since going through my depression, where I'm no longer afraid of whatever hell does or does not exist. I find more resonance with the Sufi saint here of, I don't need either. And that's not a bad thing. If the only reason I'm doing good works is a future reward rather than it is a good thing in itself, I'm doing it, but it's because I don't want to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't want to raise your children to be that way, that they're always acting in thought of fear or reward.
Right. As a matter of fact, that tends to really backfire.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like it has really backfired theologically, right? Like it. And health of American Christianity, I think, is demonstrative of how much this theory of hell and punishment and heaven as reward do not work.
Well, and then the denominations argue about who's got the guest list for either one.
Right. And it's not just that the torment and punishment in hell, it's also the idea that they're arguing over, is it infinite or finite?
Right. Honestly, the parties in hell have got to be way better than heaven. So that's The band will be at least.
Yeah.
That's my vote if I have to pick one. I'm going to go with the party.
Well, there are other versions. I mean, there's definitely a thread in Orthodox theology, creedal theology, that God is perfect and holy, and only that which has also made itself purified and holy can be in God's presence, which is kind of some of the strain of where purgatory comes from.
Right. Well, then they have like the rings of heaven, right? Like so how holy you are in life determines how close you are to the presence of God after you die, but not.
But again, that sounds a lot like a social construct. What does God care?
Right. What does God care? Right. Because
all of religion is a social construct. That's what distinguishes it from faith.
What else was this? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was I had a thought and then it went somewhere else.
If it's important, you'll remember it.
Oh, C.S. Lewis, which is very popular with a lot of evangelicals. One of my favorite books by him, The Great Divorce.
Right.
Where hell is the absolute, is nothing more than God no longer wants you. It's like separation from God. I think that's probably overstating the way I said it first time. And as heaven is more real and more community, hell is diffusion and isolation.
God, that does sound brutal. That's right.
And that was the seventh circle of hell in Dante's Inferno is an ice lake, and it's totally freezing and cold. It's sub-zero. And if you are going to take him as an allegory, he explains that's because it's the location that is the furthest from God's love.
Hell is Green Bay.
Or it could be Chicago.
It's too windy. No,
when the Bears are playing.
We suck on two continents now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, that's one of the things that he injects into the Inferno. And, of course, a lot of people don't really, they think it's, oh, yes, this is Lake of Fire. No, it's this frozen lake. You are so far from God's love that there's absolutely no warmth. All warmth is sucked out of you because you're that far away.
The chaplain and me, pastor me, mindful that it is October, and hopefully will be when I actually get this edited and posted, still be October of this year, is I think the call is for us as people of faith to challenge that carrot or whip notion of heaven and hell, especially though at this time of season when you have a lot of more evangelical conservative denominations doing, which thankfully is less in vogue than it once was, hell houses.
The
Christian alternative, where they basically, I had a youth group many, many moons ago where a parent was like, we should go to this. I'm like, hell no. What the fuck are you thinking? No. It's for those that don't know, it's basically usually a progression of rooms where whatever that denomination or church feels is the greatest of sins, which usually has something, something gay, something, something abortion, something, something drugs and alcohol. Suicide usually makes an entrance too. Mm-hmm. And in each case, they're all abandoned by God and the devil takes them. And you basically have tormented and traumatized your audience. And of course, the last venue is heaven. And your foyer tracks hung out and they give you Kool-Aid. I just picture there should be Kool-Aid at this point.
Yeah.
But this has been weaponized, both for good and for ill. Well, not good.
Oh,
for
absolutely.
Good, I mean, for heaven and hell have both been weaponized.
Yes. And that's what I was trying to get at when I'm giving you these quotes, is that
it's abusive.
It is. It is abusive. And it's pervasive in America because of Jonathan Edwards. Sin is really, really important. And it gets into this whole, you know, do you love, hate the sin, but love the sinner? And Edwards is like, no, because you do both. In one of his other sermons, everyone knows sinners in the hands of an angry God. But another one, Punishment of the Wicked, you know, he says that when saints in glory shall see the wrath of God executed on ungodly men, it will be no occasion of grief to them, but of rejoicing. You know, that we have to have this fear of eternal punishment in order to keep people in line. And that's like almost everything coming from the Puritans, who were one of the first Europeans to settle here. It's still so much of what happens in American Christianity. And it's definitely weaponized.
Well, and it reinvents itself every generation. It's like this one sermon and we're still fucking talking about it. It wasn't even that great a fucking sermon.
No. I
mean, you know, it was manipulative. If I could time travel, I'd say, hey, John, man, check your pecker, man. Suck a bag of dusty granddad dick, something, but shut the hell up.
But we needed to have some way of distinguishing between the convert and the unbeliever. And we had to have something that was going to happen to that unbeliever to make you want to convert. Because, you know, you weren't just going to convert when you heard how great Jesus was.
That there was an atonement theory that, moral exemplar that actually did, is that Jesus was set a great example and you should want to be like that. It didn't get a lot of play as much as other atonement theories, but it was out there.
Yeah, but the Great Awakening.
I'd have to look up who was sort of the...
Yeah, the Great Awakening, though, was all built on, you know, unless you've confessed your sins and actually converted in public, you're not a Christian, you're going to hell. And you're not welcome in my church. And that's been plaguing American Christianity for a couple hundred years now.
So I'll play the devil's advocate.
Okay.
The one of the theories I use for chaplaincy is by Kenneth Pargham, which is basically, to boil it down to, religion has a form and a function. And where I'm concerned as a chaplain is the function healthy? Is it working? Right. Mm-hmm. The form is going to vary. So I say all that to say, I can think of instances where people that have an extremely punitive view of hell has actually helped them live healthier lives. And I'm speaking here of not all, but a number of persons struggling with substance abuse. They were the most on their going to meetings and cutting out their triggers and all this when they would attend a particular church. Now, I don't, what does that say going long term? But it's kind of like, at least in that short term, I was like, you know, the pastor in me really wants to say that's sick and disturbing. Mm-hmm. But the chaplain's like, but this is keeping you square.
This is keeping you square.
And so that's where my hell, and let's be fair, it is privatized. We do the same thing with heaven to the best of our abilities to be inclusive. Anyway, mm-hmm. And that's a very limited wrench, but I think it's one that I was thinking, I was like, yeah, I do have some, I can think of instances where this might be okay, but it's very few. And I'm a little hesitant even to share that one, but.
Yeah. Well, most of the scholars that I've been reading, the issue for them is taking attitudes like you're describing and squaring those with theories of justice and mercy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where it becomes problematic, you know, that if you take this pure Augustine view of hell as being predestined, unending, place of conscious torment, and it being penal, then you got to rethink your theory of justice, or you got to rethink your theory of hell.
Well, one of the things that I envy with Judaism is that you all, when you did the commentary, you kept the names in who said what.
Yeah.
And you acknowledge it as interpretation. Is so often Christians conflate whatever their major theological influence as being next to the gospel, or being, oh no, Jesus said it that way, and not able to say, like, well, this is John Calvin's view. This was really more Augustine than God, or, and right, to be able to have that healthy interaction. But that's very hard to do, but it's something I envy. You know, I had one preaching professor that did not like study Bibles, because people would confuse the little devotional bits or the interpretation, the commentary, the gospel, and it's not.
Right.
Yeah. I thought that he said that. He's like, when you go to study scripture, don't use one of these. Just the text. Read it for where it's at. What is it saying? What is it speaking? Mm-hmm. And then, if you need some elucidation, which you will, go and consult, but realizing you're consulting, you know, right, you're not confirming. And it's, and you think about that. That's hard to do even with a seminary education.
Oh yeah.
But how much pain and suffering could real and, well, just real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feel real. But if the person is experiencing that, that could have been saved by just realizing, Hey, you know, yeah, Jonathan Edwards has his take, but there are other voices even within his time period that would challenge that. Probably not in Puritan New England, but there were folks that thought differently. I mean, we've lived long enough to see Roman Catholics even, you know, kind of like, we're not going to go so heavy handed on the hell thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going back, you know, that's a huge tectonic kind of shift. When you think about it.
It is.
Yeah. I don't know beans about purgatory, other than the usual stoner kind of answer of like, dude, what if this is purgatory? And referring to here and now. Boom. Is that just mind blown or just...
No, well, if you think about it, this is preparation for the world to come.
And that's what purgatory theoretically is. My understanding with Catholicism, and I don't know a ton about it, but most people, to my understanding, are in purgatory. Like, most people have to spend time in purgatory. Like, saints, because I know that the definition of a saint is somebody who is guaranteed to be in heaven. You know they're in heaven. That's why they can intercede for you. But most people don't reach that level of kind of guarantee.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's going to sit bedside with a dying person going like, dude, you're going to have some work to do. Let's just say that your resume is lacking.
I mean, no one, that's not really very good pastoral care, but like, I think most people are doing their work anyways when they're on their deathbed. Like, most people start doing that work in preparation if they haven't done it at other points in their life.
And this idea in Judaism that, you know, this is a necessity, that it's a, because it's not purgatory, it is, you know, Gehenna or hell. And it's a process of purification to prepare you to be in God's presence in the days to come, the world to come. What's interesting is that we do recognize that, well, first of all, no one goes to heaven in Judaism.
Okay? Well, yeah.
Because that's where the angels and God lives. Moses was the only human being to ever do that and will be. And that's not an afterlife thing. The world to come is not that we go to heaven. But one of the things that we do is when someone passes, we say Kaddish for them for a certain period of time. And in a wonderful, another logical twist by the rabbis, we determine, well, how long should that be? And they said it should be at least a year. Well, there should be no more. It should be at least, but no more than 12 months.
It speaks finite.
Well, no. Well, that, but also it's the idea of going through an entire calendar.
Right.
Right. But because 12 months is this time you're supposed to be spending in Gehinnom, there's a tradition among European Ashkenazic Jews, because we're superstitious, to only say Kaddish for 11 months. Mm-hmm. Because we want to assume that our dearly departed has so few things to be purified that they're out in 11 months instead of 12.
Mm-hmm. For good behavior.
So, right. So we don't want to impugn their reputation by continuing to say Kaddish for that 12th month. You know, like, no, they're good. They're good after 11.
Definitely. We're
weird and wonderful people.
Aren't we, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So was Satan Chief Pecker Wrecker? Is that
Chief Pecker Wrecker?
Also, really bad.
There is no Satan in Judaism. There's Hasatan. And Hasatan appears twice in Tanakh.
Well, somebody's got to be a Pecker Wrecker.
Well, that's all the Gentile women that the Jewish men sleep with.
God. You're going to get so many nasty
up everybody.
Comments. Yeah. And stuff.
Chief Pecker Wrecker.
That interfaith sex.
Yeah. Borderline bestiality, really, when you think about it.
Dude, no, but for real.
Whoa.
We can talk about that later, but there are some really, really weird things that the rabbis have to say about fucking Gentiles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is not ideal.
Oh, no. Not at all.
I love how in the background of Helena's video, it's got two cats staring at each other, basically ignoring the hell out of, oh, no, you're going to get it later. You've talked way too much about our domain.
Yeah.
I'm going to shit in your shoes while you sleep.
No, she'll lick my nose. She cleans my face while I'm sleeping.
That's not cleaning, sweetie. They're tasting. They're waiting for you to sleep late, and they're like, I'm going into soft tissue.
Gonna go get some little snack.
There's actually evidence. Cats will eat you quicker if you're dead than your dog.
Yes, than dogs. Yes.
Oh, yeah. No,
yeah. Sure. Cats are assholes.
I'd be picked clean in a day flat in my house.
Yeah. Oh, circle of life.
Well, that was real morbid.
Circle of life or a circle of hell? So,
a lot of interesting discussion.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting how so much of what we think about when we think about afterlife and hell comes from things other than our religion and faith. And yet it informs the religion and faith of so many people.
Well, and we always bring her up because she's just a wonderful person. But one of the insights by Jay Dana when we talk about evangelism, no, it's about hospitality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Evangelism is driven by that fear and reward. Hospitality is, I welcome you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Which in itself, you know, I just think that's very valuable.
Yeah, not to throw it totally under the bus, but also to defend it. Judaism is focused on a future reward, which is the world to come. The difference is that we're not supposed to, fear or whatever, but we're actually supposed to actively make sure it happens.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because would God redeem the world? Only to abandon it.
Right.
Does it make sense?
Right? Doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
Talk about it. Yeah.
It's like God, the absentee father who has weekend visitation rights that he never really uses. I mean, it's just, what the hell, man?
Yep.
What the hell?
Yep.
What the hell?
So, I think I might be ready for some words of wisdom, Charles.
Okay. Some words of wisdom. I'll try, but they're from Jonathan Edwards.
Oh.
Yeah. You contribute nothing to your salvation except the sin that made it necessary.
God damn.
Yeah, because this is the episode from hell.
All right, well, thank y'all.
I would have thought, like, you know, maybe other things that you expect to hear when you get to hell. Welcome to Florida or Detroit, Cleveland.
Yeah.
Well, not like Southern Florida, like Miami, like Central Georgia that's actually Florida. Whatever that
North Florida state. That's actually Southern Georgia and Eastern Mississippi.
Wow. Just the side of hell. Other good examples of hell, DMV, middle school, anything.
Yeah.
Band concerts. These are all things that are hell.
Yeah.
Waiting for the cable company.
Yeah. And ending this meeting.
It has been hell with you too. Honest to God. Well, I'm Chris Henson, and I'm still the Gentile.
I'm Helena Epstein, and I'm still the ampersand of reason.
And I'm Charles Breton, and I'm still the Jew.
Join us on our next episode, where you can listen to a Jew and a Gentile walk into a bar mitzvah. Wishing I could change
the things that I... Special thanks to Ethan Sapphire for letting us use his song Shoulda Woulda Coulda as our theme. You can download Ethan's music at soundclick.com/Ethan Sapphire. Take it back the hand if you didn't like the deal. You made your choices, you gotta live.
snakes, you'll get another chance at that.